podcast. This is the weekly podcast where we review the latest shows on Amazon, Netflix, and other streaming services. We also talk about the latest news. Normally, it is Daryl Etherington and I, but Daryl is at CES right now, so Jordan has graciously agreed to step in. Jordan, do you regret the fact that we're not at CES right now?
Not at all. I feel great about it. I hear the lights went out and there were rainstorms, and it's generally awful every year. So as my first year away from CES, I feel really proud of my decision.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, like, I was like feeling good about it. And then when people were going and they're like, there's like all this excitement, I felt a little regret. Like, maybe I should do it again next year, but I think that would be a mistake.
Yeah, it's always one of those things where, like, you get there and day one and day two are kind of fun. And then by day three, you're like, why am I here? Who am I? What is there to live for? I also feel like your first year is really fun, you know, because you're like in awe right. of the whole thing. And then by like year two, three, four, you're like, oh, again, you know, like, are we still doing this? They could have it once every 10 years and it might be more exciting. But
right.
I'm going to try not to.
Well, and part of the problem is also not to like put anyone on the spot here, but like Matt Burns, who is a great guy, great TechCrunch editor, but he loves Sushi Samba, and he just will, like, it's just like five meals.
Please,
like,
don't
in
talk
one week at Sushi
poorly
Samba.
About Sushi Samba. I'm with Matt on okay. this one.
Oh no.
I will eat Sushi Samba every day for the rest of my life and be perfectly fine with it. I don't even care if I get sick.
You're part of the problem, Jordan. Yeah. That's fine. Yep. That's fine. Well, so we're going to touch on a couple of pieces of news this week. I mean, obviously a lot of the attention was on CES, but actually Hulu, which is the first company we're talking about, had a presence at CES, and they used that to make a couple of announcements, even if they're not hardware announcements per se. One was that Hulu, I mean, they now have more than 17 million subscribers, or they ended 2017 with more than 17 million subscribers. And they're also like sort of previewing this new live TV guide. So it seems like, you know, that there's like a lot of stuff coming down the pipe as far as Hulu goes. Sounds like you're a pretty big fan of Hulu, right?
Yeah, I am a big fan of Hulu. So I'm like a pretty full-fledged TV viewer. I have cable, Hulu, Netflix, HBO on like every device. So I like them all very much. My mom, though, recently, she was on AT&T U-verse. And her price kept going up, and she was like, I don't know what to do because I really like the news, and, you know, Dad wants to watch sports, but I just don't want to keep paying like $150 a month. And I put her on a free trial of Hulu Live over Thanksgiving, and by the time I got home for Christmas, she was ready to cancel AT&T. So over the Christmas holiday, I got to use Hulu Live on her TV like all week, and I have to say, it's pretty good. Like, the biggest caveat for me is that even when you, like, record something, you can't skip commercials.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, like, even on, like, a DVR or, like, when you add something to, like, My Stuff, like, or something's on demand, you can't skip forward on the commercials. So, that's a little frustrating, I feel like, when people are used to DVR and they want to skip the commercials, but I liked it overall. I think the streaming quality was great. The amount of stuff that they have is amazing. It's literally like, you know how people complain about cable and they're like, I wish that I just had everything that I want and nothing that I don't want. Like, that is Hulu Live. Like, literally, it's like E, Bravo, HGTV, food, you know, all the sports channels, Disney XD, the four major broadcasters, USA, TNT, and like, that's it. And it's like perfect. It's exactly what you want out of cable television. But they announced that they have this new guide, which I think is a good move, because the other kind of annoying thing about Hulu Live is when you go into live TV, the first thing that you see are the top five networks that you normally watch.
Right.
And then you have to click watch more, and it goes into like a big grid, the same thing that you're used to on like a Netflix or Hulu, where you see like a grid of different things to watch. But you don't get to see like what's coming up next. You only get to, so like if a movie is like 10 minutes from ending, you don't get to see what movie comes on next. So you just have to spend that 10 minutes in like limbo. So their new guide is going to be more akin, I think, to like what you're used to on cable, where you can see both what's on and what's coming on next, and a little bit more easy to kind of navigate. And I think that'll be super helpful.
Yeah, because I mean, it seems like, and I haven't really done much. I mean, I don't have Hulu Live. I just have regular Hulu, but that it's a really different like navigation paradigm of like here's this library of content versus here are a bunch of channels where there's live content. So like, it makes sense that they would have to like experiment a little bit to just to figure out like the right way to present all of that and not have it be totally overwhelming.
Well, and what I do think is cool is the live TV product offers actually more on-demand content than you get just from Hulu On Demand, I believe. I could be wrong about that, but like, for example, I can never find Big Bang Theory on my regular Hulu product, but my mom has Hulu Live, and through it, they provide like the TNT On Demand, which has like the reruns. So you have like 3 or 4 episodes per season of Big Bang available on the Hulu Live on demand, if that
Right, I
makes
guess that
sense.
makes sense that like the channels that are part of the live experience would also offer some of that on-demand content
Exactly.
too.
So that was really good too. I mean, I thought it was interesting. The Sarah Perez wrote a post about this new, grid or not grid, but interface that they're gonna do for live TV. And the guy was saying like most of the live TV usage is on demand, but I think that's probably geared towards that extra stuff that I was talking about. And
Right.
that most of the live viewing is news and sports, which I think is exactly what these like hybrid live TV on demand products are trying to do. Like, it's so hard to cut the cord if you love watching the NFL and baseball and you watch, the Today Show or Morning Joe or whatever it is, that you watch in the morning. But to have that for half the cost, I feel like is a really, really solid proposition. So I expect to see growth out of Hulu next year for sure, or this year, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, so like, I know that you and I were both, I think, fans also of The Handmaid's Tale, which, has been basically sweeping all of the, all of the different awards. Are you a fan of Hulu originals overall?
Yeah, so I feel like The Handmaid's Tale is the one that stands out. I haven't actually gotten into any of the other ones. I've tried a couple and like never it never stuck. And I think that's like a testament to having to put your best foot forward, so to speak. Like Netflix has so many originals, but there are only a handful maybe that are like truly outstanding and that like people cannot get enough of and that people would get Netflix just to watch. And Handmaid's Tale, I feel like, is the first of that for Hulu. And I think it was
Yeah.
interesting that it came out like the same time that they were announcing Hulu Live. Like, they were making a play that was very strategic. They said, you have to see Handmaid's Tale. Your friends are all talking about it. And while you're at it, we have this new deal for you. What's
Right. And
$8?
while
What's
you're like checking
$40
all
when
this
you're going to
out,
spend $8?
yeah, why not just go all in? So are you personally considering just switching to Hulu to like live TV?
Absolutely. Yeah. My biggest concern, and I think like what will be frustrating to a lot of these cord cutters, and it'd be interesting if Hulu could make a play or YouTube TV even could make a play on this, is your internet cost going up, because these cable internet providers, they like to, it's so hard, right? It's harder than like a romantic breakup, I would say, to try to get on. I did it for my mom with AT&T and it took 1.5 hours. And there's all kinds of surveys and explaining, and they try to scare you. They're like,
Yeah.
well, that was a promotional deal, and you're locked into a contract, and you might have to pay up to $370 to cancel. And you're like, well, what will I actually have to pay? And they're like, $42. And you're like, well, why did you say $370? You know what I mean? It's just like this whole emotional thing. And the internet price will probably go up for a few people by 5, 10, $15,
Right.
because they're unbundling. It would be cool if Hulu or YouTube TV would be like, oh, we'll cover, 10% of your new internet fees, or, I don't know, some sort of rebate or something just to get people over the hump,
Yeah.
would be an interesting play. I don't know if there's cash in the bank for that, but yeah, I think that's the biggest hurdle for me is, am I willing to pay more for internet? Chances are the answer is yes, because you're still saving money.
Right. But you're right that, I mean, and we should acknowledge, I mean, so you and I are both Verizon employees, and Verizon also is where I get my cable and my internet, and that they very much do not want people to be switching to internet only, because then, you know, then it's, I mean, A, they're just getting less money, and then they're I think, becomes much more of a commodity product where, you know, they could theoretically be sort of supplanted by a competing service very easily. And so there's just a lot of pressure to try to keep people from doing that.
Well, and then that's not to mention, like, there's some fear, I feel like, in switching over to Hulu Live in the midst of all this net neutrality stuff. Like, not to be like a fear monger or anything, but that's exactly the kind of thing, like a Hulu Live when you've cut your TV package is exactly the kind of thing that an ISP would milk you for. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
So it's a little stressful. I actually am a Verizon. I'm obviously a Verizon employee, but I don't get, Verizon doesn't serve my neighborhood. So I'm on Spectrum, Time Warner Cable, which is got like the lowest customer service rankings among all of them, I think, except for Comcast. So it's going to be a fun phone call. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, maybe you can record it and we can put it on the podcast. That'll yeah. be, you know, just so everyone knows what it's like. Yeah. Well, let's maybe move on then to the other, I think, piece of news we wanted to talk about. And this is a continuation of some, you know, story we've been following for, I guess, you know, about a week now, which is Logan Paul, who is a vlogger. He was big on Vine and now on YouTube. And he basically made this video, posted this video that was in a, you know, Japanese, what's sort of known as the suicide forest. And it, you know, included a dead body of somebody who had hung themselves, and that didn't go over super well. And now, like, YouTube now is in sort of full damage control mode, and, you know, had like, he'd already taken the video down and was sort of like gonna, like, he's like, I'm gonna take some time off to figure out, you know, what I did wrong and think about what I've done. But now YouTube's like has basically booted him from the
preferred
the YouTube. The Google preferred program, right? And also is like basically they don't want him to be involved in their like original content on YouTube Red.
Yeah, I think, you know, I didn't want to get super involved. I didn't cover any of this stuff, and it sounded kind of disgusting to me, to be honest, like that he would do that. So I stayed away from a lot of it, but I did read his apology, and
yeah.
I saw someone say on Twitter, after seeing his apology, that he used the word like me or I, like somewhere in the 20s range, and he used the word sorry once. Like, you know, he just, and I'm not trying to cast judgment on anyone, but I think that YouTube, you know, kind of put this kid on a pedestal and it backfired, obviously. And I, you know, I feel pretty disgusted by the whole thing. I mean, that's, you have to know your boundaries. There's no excuse. There's no age group that makes any of this okay, you know? And I hear a lot of kids watch his stuff, right? Like, young people
right.
like to watch his stuff. So, yeah, I feel like people who are icons on the internet or influencers, I hate to use that word, but, you know, that's exactly what he was, need to try to make the internet a good place, because there's already so much trash out on the internet, you know? Like, you need to make a conscious effort to put forth good things that are inspirational and, you know, bring happiness and joy to people, and not, you know, trash, not bad stuff that obviously is against the rules with Google as well. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess, like, I always have slightly mixed feelings when there's this sort of like backlash against a high profile person, in the sense that, or at least, I mean, like some of the other videos that people were sharing, I think there was one in particular showing some of his other footage from Japan, which was also, like, you know, frankly, pretty tasteless. And is that, like, it seems like there's this sort of, like, on-off switch where it's either, like, we're okay with this person, or this person is complete garbage. And, like, so it always makes me a little bit uneasy, like, when somebody is sort of, you know, put in that, like, sort of, the kind of garbage, like, column for a while. But, I mean, that said, I haven't watched the video because it was taken down, and I don't really need to see that. But from all the descriptions I've read of the video, like, it was horrifying. And again, I think one of the points that the people have made, and including on TechCrunch, is that obviously, you know, Logan Paul was incredibly tasteless and insensitive to not only film the video, but to think there's a good idea to post it. But, like, that, like, it seems like the YouTube process fell down in a number of different places. And so there's, you know, some broader questions about, like, what kind of responsibility does YouTube have in this kind of situation?
Well, and that's, like, the scarier conversation almost, because you think about these, like, social networks and, you know, including YouTube and the question of censorship, and it becomes really scary because on the one hand, yes, you want people who are putting misleading information or false information out there to stop doing that. You want people who are spewing hate and, you know, putting up graphic, horrible images and violent and making threats to all kind of get off those networks. And you can see the damage that that can do with stuff like Facebook and the election and Russia. But on the same hand, like on the same side, you don't want to advocate for censorship at all either. So it's like, I don't know. It's something that these tech companies are, 2018 is going to be a tough year, and 2019 and 2022, because there is no answer right now. Like, nobody has an answer. Zuck said it was going to be his, you know, 2018 goal to get rid of hate speech on the internet. Like, okay, bro, like, what, you know, how do you do that? And it's going to be an interesting year to watch kind of how people deal with these issues. And like you said, try to manage the gray area, you know, not to cast someone out entirely, but to kind of advocate for good behavior. I don't know what that looks like. It's going to be interesting.
Right. Well, I think I think you're also getting at what's one of the things that's really tough for these big giant platforms is, I think when people talk of complain about censorship on the internet, one of the easy answers. So, like, for example, if somebody is like posting like really horrible shit, like in the TechCrunch comments, right? Like, we can delete those comments and like, and they might complain about censorship, but be like, listen, there's so many other places you could post this. Like, this is just our site and you're not going to do it here. And we're just exercising, you know, our basic, like, you know, like quality control. It's not censorship because you can go say that, say what you want to say anywhere else. But when you become, when you're talking about a platform that it's so ubiquitous and so powerful, like Google or YouTube or Facebook, that line starts to blur where you can't just treat it the way you would if you were just another website on the internet.
Well, and then there's the question of, like, how do you get that many people to then police the site? And how do you draw lines in the sand that are clear? Because, like, even like, language itself is so subjective, right? So on the one hand, like, how do you formulate the rules? What are the rules? That's difficult enough. We watch Twitter go back and forth, like, you know, over and over and over again, trying to figure out what their rules are. And then on the other hand, how do you, like, get AI and machine learning to do a good job of it, which so far has not been successful? Do you hire a bunch of people? Like, how does that work too? So, like I said, the next couple years are going to be very interesting.
Right. And I guess the last thing I did want to say on that, though, is, I mean, I think that this is an enormous and complicated problem, and I think it's going to be something that all these companies are going to be wrestling with for a while. That said, I don't want to completely let them off the hook. I think they're, like, basic, like, you know, it doesn't seem like it's that much of a, like, judgment, like, that difficult of a judgment call to be like, oh, this video from a famous person includes a dead body in it. Let's not post this. Or, you know, this person is, like, a Nazi. Let's not have their account up. I think, like, it's both true that it's a very difficult problem, but I think a lot of these companies probably could be taking it a lot more seriously than they are.
Yeah, I agree.
Or that they've only started to take it that seriously.
I agree. It's the gray area that should be difficult. There's other stuff that's super cut and dry that they've just totally dropped the ball on.
Yeah. Well, now that we're all serious and depressed about the future, let's talk about our main review.
The serious and depressing future.
Which is Black Mirror Season 4 on Netflix. What we're going to do is we're going to talk on a high level about our thoughts on Season 4. And so we're going to keep that free of spoilers. And then at a certain point, because I know there are things that at least I want to talk about that are spoilers, that include spoilers, we'll have an ample warning and a time that you can kind of jump off if you haven't seen Season 4 yet. But right now, you can listen on completely safely. So, Jordan, I mean, I think you were a fan of Black Mirror before, right?
Yeah, I've watched – I actually haven't seen all of Season 1 through Season 3. I'd say I've seen, like, 75 to 80% of the episodes before the season. And now I've seen every episode of this season. So I have a couple – to revisit in the past. I can't binge watch it. That's for sure. Like, I can't watch it like I watch anything else. I can watch 2 episodes tops, depending on the episode, before I need to, like, hibernate for, like, a week.
I have binged both seasons 3 and 4, and I will say I do not advise it. It's a pretty tough experience. Well, and I think the other thing that happens when you're binging Black Mirror is because, especially the recent seasons, they tended to have this kind of formula where most of the episodes are sort of what we would think of as like a typical Black Mirror episode, which is like, you know, usually fairly dark, things don't work out that well, and the episode ends and you feel kind of bad. And then there's usually like 1 or 2 that are like different from that, and usually like more optimistic or different in some ways. And I think when you binge it, you start to like just maybe think the ones that are a little different also like are maybe better than they are. Although I actually think that like San Junipero is still one of the best episodes that Black Mirror has ever aired.
Well, and I think a lot of people will agree with that, and there's a reason for it. And it's not, I mean, the acting in it is phenomenal, the writing, the plot, all of it is great, but like at the end of the day, it's really, really hard to love something that makes you feel like shit. And like that is what most of Black Mirror is. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to look back on an episode that made you question everything. And I also feel like I don't know if you feel this way, but I feel like as like a TechCrunch editor, I finish an episode of Black Mirror where tech has like driven us off a cliff and feel like, oh God, like what have I written about, you know, like what have I like exposed to the world that is eventually going to end us? You know what I mean? Like, not to be like super self-centered, but like, I think there's some level of like, oh Lord, we're writing about all this stuff, and in 20 years it's gonna like eat us or chase us down or, you know, whatever, crawl into our heads.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something of, and I mean, even without watching Black Mirror, you can go on Twitter and see people say this, which is just, you know, this complaint about TechCrunch specifically, or the tech press in general, just like not necessarily wrestling with some of these bigger questions about like what the technology is doing to us, and instead just being like, hey, this is cool, or hey, this is making a lot of money. And not necessarily asking the bigger questions. And I mean, that is definitely something that happens when I watch Black Mirror too, although not as often as I would think. I maybe just feel so like going from what we write about on a day-to-day basis to like what you see on Black Mirror feels like such a leap that I don't necessarily make that connection.
Yeah, putting our job aside or whatever, I think that Black Mirror is one of those shows that you have to be prepared for. You have to know what's coming at you, and you have to like have something to cuddle afterwards, because I mean, and it doesn't have to be tech. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's not the first like dystopian movie or dystopian TV series out there. It just happens to focus on like how tech kind of is the cornerstone of that. And I think that anybody who is paying attention to the tech sector and government and all of the things that are happening over the past 5 years and what will happen in the next 5 they're aware of the fact that we're like not getting better really as a society in any way. You know what I mean? Like, I don't mean to be so bleak. I think we should just talk about the season. What did you think of this season as it compares to past seasons?
I would say that it might actually be my favorite season.
I
thought, I mean, because like people had been talking so much about the first episode, USS Callister, as how that was like the highlight, and I saw that and I hated it. I did not, and it took me a while to like get back into like just the mood to watch again, because that just left such a bad taste in my mouth.
Disagree with you. We'll fight about it in a minute.
Oh yeah. But then the rest of the season, I thought, I mean, the last episode, Black Museum, I thought like didn't quite work for me, but I think it had enough interesting stuff in it. And if I'm being honest, I think there's a lot of really, the thing about Black Mirror for me in general is that like, even the episodes that I think are not good always have something interesting that I'm glad I watched it. Although on the flip side, even the episodes that I think are great sometimes have like something that I think is like dumb that I'm kind of annoyed by. But like after like, and I acknowledge, and we can get into this, I think there's some personal reasons why I didn't really like USS Callister, but like once we got past, and maybe it had just been built up too much, but once we got past that, I thought like, this was, you know, possibly like the strongest collection of episodes they've done.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, like you said, there sometimes in Black Mirror episodes, there are those different ones that kind of end on a more optimistic note. And you can tell even from the order of the episodes in this one that they like did a little bit more to that end. Do you know what I mean? On this one, I think there are 6 episodes, and I would say that like 4 of them have a happy ending.
Huh. Let's see. I'm trying to think if I would agree with that. I mean, yeah. I think...
like, maybe not happy, yeah, but just. Like, a just ending.
Right.
Do you know
right.
what I mean?
Because, like, I mean, and we can maybe talk... I don't want to, I guess, yeah, say specifically which ones
I don't
before
either.
We get into spoilers. But I will say that, like, yeah, there's one episode in particular which I think has... I think is maybe one of the ones you're thinking of that has, like, a just ending. But I also was maybe... that was probably the one that I was the most shaken by, just because it was, like... the stuff that happened in it was so dark.
Yeah, it was
and like
gruesome.
It kept being like, oh, this, you know, this, at least they won't do this, and then that bad thing happens. and then so it sort of ends in this way that you're like, okay, well, justice is served, but I still feel pretty bad.
But I think that's the difference, yeah, right? Like, I think that's the, yeah, difference between something like San Junipero, where like really everything did work out, you know, and right, like you felt good watching it, and you weren't like, there were a couple dark moments, but for the most part, like, it was a right, good, happy story. And this has a lot of dark stories, but there are more just endings than there are like, this is the end of the world endings. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And I feel like most of what I've seen in past Black Mirror seasons has been, not only is it gruesome to watch, but it ends on a pessimistic note, which is like, you know, adding insult to injury in a way.
Yeah. And I, you know, now that I'm like thinking about the count, yeah, I would say like probably there are like 2 endings that I would like call, like, describe as like just flat out, like, you know, just like happy, happy endings. And then a lot of endings that are sort of a mix that like have, you know, elements where you feel like, okay, well, like the right thing happened, even if I don't feel great about everything. And then there's like one ending, which is like one of the bleakest endings that that Black Mirror has ever done.
I would say it's 2, 2, and 2. But yeah, I think we're agreeing on most of it.
Yeah.
And I mean, on an episode level, like, I think the casting was really fantastic throughout. Like, I thought, you know, I don't want to like spoil. I don't know what will and won't spoil. But like, you know, the casting throughout I thought was really great. And I didn't really have problems with any of the episodes, except for maybe, and by problems I mean like just didn't really like watching it. Like, I just couldn't really find myself getting into it, except for like 1, maybe 2.
Yeah. What would you say was your favorite?
It's a tough one. I think it's a tie between the 2 that you didn't like, USS Callister and Black Museum.
Okay.
What was your
favorite?
Well,
I mean, I would say my favorite was probably Metalhead.
Oh my god, really?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh my goodness, we're so different. We're such different people, Anthony.
It's true. I think, well, okay, so, well, why don't you talk about why you know, in general terms, what did you like about USS Callister and Black Museum?
So, without trying to give anything away...
I think we could talk about concepts. We just don't want to, like, you know, give away, like, the twists.
So, to
and
me,
the endings.
Callister was not, like, it... specific plot aside, it was super timely in that you have this person, this woman, who is overcoming misogyny. And to me, like, that was so subtly woven through everything, and then also explicitly woven through everything, that I really, really enjoyed it. And I liked the kind of dual worlds, is I guess the way I'll put it. Like, I
right,
liked jumping back and forth. And I thought there was just like a ton of excitement. It was dreary at times, but there was like just a lot of action in it, which I feel like is sometimes missing from Black Mirror episodes.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's fair. And I mean, I was never bored watching it. I think, like, just from a pure, like, production design, like, it is, like, just an amazing, like, so, like, the conceit is basically that a lot of it takes place in this, like, virtual world that's clearly a pastiche of, like, the 60s version of Star Trek. And I just think they did an amazing job of recreating that feel, especially in like the first like 5 minutes, which is like almost supposed to feel like an episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And I was like, what are we watching? Maria turned it on, and I was like, what? Is this Black Mirror? Like, I had to triple check, you know? I was just like, this is bizarre. And then, obviously, it gets very Black Mirror very quickly, but...
Yeah. I think what I didn't like about it was that there were... And I don't... And I mean, I when I say hate it, these there were specific moments that just kind of made me kind of clutch my head for maybe personal reasons, but, like, it was... It just felt like a lot of... The certain things in the plot didn't make a lot of sense, and to me were, like, you know, fairly, well, just really dumb. And my friends sometimes like to make fun of me because I'm generally very forgiving of that kind of stuff. But I think with something like Black Mirror, where they just really try to make it feel like it's like the day after tomorrow and this is like stuff that could really happen, when there's that kind of like sloppiness around like how things work, I'm less forgiving. And maybe I was just like in a cranky mood about it, but I agree with that.
I was actually confused during that episode. I think I know what you're talking about. And I was like, I don't think that's how it works. And yeah, I don't know anything about the internet. And if I think it doesn't work that way, then most people won't buy it.
Same. And I think the other thing that I think is interesting is like, I mean, and you know, I don't want to like ever take away from somebody, you know, who saw it and found that like the story of somebody like dealing with this kind of misogyny, like, you know, and finding resonance there. I think one of the reasons that I kind of wrestled with it or resisted it a little bit is because I think sometimes I think the kinds of stories that are about misogyny, particularly this kind of like tech nerd misogyny, is when people sort of, when it's sort of connected to broader kinds of misogyny. And so it's like where I think like in Silicon Valley, there's this expectation of like, oh, we're all better than that. And like you watch something like Ex Machina, which I think is like does a great job of this, where it is saying that like actually like we're not, and like that the men in tech are still men. And so like there's like they're still in many cases just shit. Whereas I think this one is more like here are like the good guys who are just like the bros. And here's this one guy who's terrible because he's like the nerd.
I
find like that kind of lets the other guys off the hook.
Oh, I totally disagree. I think what was so great about it is that like you start with like this huge amount of empathy for this single character and everyone else is a bad guy. And slowly it shifts. And yeah, you create a level, you know, your empathy for this single guy kind of might go down over time, and it definitely does, but it also, you still feel the justification for it in a way. And then your empathy grows for everyone else that you hated. There's really a single character who ends having been kind of perfect throughout.
Right.
And I feel like you have this one guy you empathize with who turns into, you know, not so great. And then you have these other guys who started out awful, and you kind of understand them a little bit more at the end, but none of it justifies anything. Like, they're all bad guys at the end, except for this other one person, right? So I just felt like I love any story or movie that flips it on its head, and that's not the only instance in this season that Black Mirror does that, where you start with a hero or heroine who turns out to not be so great. And I really liked that about USS Callister. I don't feel like it let the other guys off the hook. But that's all just right, my perception.
I mean, you've actually done that makes me feel more charitable towards it than I did before. I think part of the reason is because I think the sort of the level, like the extent to which the nerd character, to be simplistic, becomes a villain by the end, sort of to me throws that balance off. But I think you make a good point that, I mean, your perception of the characters is like evolving as the episode goes on.
Good.
So Black Museum, this is a contest, and it's all about who won the debate.
Everything I do is a competition. Black Museum, is that what you want to know? What I liked about it?
Yeah.
Well, again, like I feel like people could look at Black Museum and call it lazy, or they could call it resourceful, and I'm choosing to call it resourceful. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and I liked it for that reason too, that it felt like that the conceit is basically that this woman goes, like, ends up, is, like, well, there's also this cool little intro where she's just basically, like, charging her, like, solar-powered car, and then while she's waiting for that to happen, she goes into this sort of, like, museum next to the gas station, which ends up being this museum where there's a lot of Black Mirror-type stuff, and then you end up with getting a couple of Black Mirror-type stories.
Well, and, like, how much do you love that her car is, like, a 50s model that's solar charged? I was, like, obsessed with that. But, yeah, so, like, you know, it's essentially Black Mirror as a season in an episode, because you get a handful of different Black Mirror-esque stories. And when it was first going through and we got to, like, the second story within this episode, I was like, you know, this might be a little lazy. Like, I feel like they just, like, took all of their kind of, like, half-baked ideas and just threw them into this, like, final episode. But it ends in a way that I think is brings the whole thing together, or at least tries to. And I was okay with that. I thought it was actually kind of a relief to have, like, these stories for 15 minutes instead of for, like, an hour and 10 minutes. Like, it shows that they can get them done in that same fashion, at least, like, the smaller ones. And I liked the narration of it. I liked the way that the museum guy was kind of telling the stories from his own perspective, and you learn more and more about him as it goes on. And I don't know, that I found really interesting. I thought it was a good episode.
Yeah, I actually, so when I was saying, like, I guess expressing some hesitation, it was more like because I think it feels like, in the same way that the Hated in the Nation, which was like the season finale last season, was sort of like this kind of swing for the fences episode where it was just like bigger and kind of in some ways more ambitious. And so, like, not everything about it worked for me, but I liked it a lot because of, like, what they were trying to do. I mean, one of the other aspects of it I think is really interesting, as somebody who sometimes is a little bit suspicious of, like, this formula that, like, Black Mirror kind of can sometimes fall into, where it's just like, all right, here's this technology, what's the worst thing that can happen? And inevitably the worst thing will happen, which I think is, like, a totally legitimate way, you know, a legitimate point to make, but sometimes can feel a little bit formulaic. And so they kind of acknowledge it in this episode, where every time he's telling this story, and then the guy who owns the museum, and then the guest, the woman, she will immediately be like, it'll start with a good thing, and then she'll be like, there's a but in there, isn't there? There's, like, something that goes wrong, and that always, like, kind of happens. And so it feels like this kind of fun way to sort of acknowledge, you know, some of the commonalities between all these different stories.
Well, and it also, I don't know if it necessarily proves that Black Mirror is happening in a single universe, maybe across a number of different plot points, but it felt that way, right? Because there were all these different things from past episodes. White Bear was in there. I know that there's other stuff in there, but there was like, you know, callbacks to these previous episodes. And it made you feel like, oh, maybe this, you know, these might be insular stories, but they're existing all in the same universe. And that also, I feel like, makes Black Mirror a little bit more thought-provoking. Like, it's one thing to tell a story that exists all on its own and then do the same thing over, you know, do that over and over and over again. And it's another thing to kind of decide where things happen in time and space. And I'd be interested, actually, to know, like, if the folks at Black Mirror, the producers and the writers and stuff, have, like, actual years in mind for these things, right?
Yeah. Because
there are certain things that happen, like, for example, Metalhead, like, that to me feels like it has to be way, 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 way in the future.
Right. Or is it supposed to suggest simply that, well, some of this stuff happens in the same universe, but there are going to be exceptions, like Metalhead, that don't fit into it?
Or maybe Metalhead just hasn't happened yet.
Right. And it turns out that, like, all of this is sort of meaningless because soon humanity will just be gone.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I liked Black Museum. I mean, I didn't really hate any of the episodes. I would say my least favorite was actually Archangel, which I didn't expect.
Yeah.
And the rest I felt pretty good about. I didn't love Metalhead. Like, I was okay with it, and I enjoyed watching it. I thought it was interesting, but it was, like, one of those It's like when you watch a movie and there's like one person, you know, or like almost like 12 Angry Men, where you're like watching the same room for however long. It's just like, I wanted context the whole time. Like, I wanted context. I wanted to know like why and where and what the hell this is all about. And that never happened. It was just in a window in its own little universe.
Yeah, and I think that was why I liked it. And again, this is partly because of, like, you know, seeing it in the context of Black Mirror, where I think there is the tendency sometimes to sort of over-explain and to kind of be like, you know, to have this slightly moralistic tone. And so to have an episode where that's all stripped away and you're just like, here is a really scary robot and it is killing people and it's basically, you know, very quickly down to this one woman versus this robot. It felt really refreshing in the context of the season. I think also just like, so David Slade, I think, was the director on that. And I think he just did an amazing job of this like really stark, beautiful episode that just doesn't look like anything else. And the effect that they created for the robot, which I actually don't know how they did it, but it looked like it was like either puppetry or stop motion or something that felt very unnatural and didn't look like your normal CGI. Like all of that to me just made it like very, very unsettling and just, like I was just like really tense and frightened like the whole time.
Same. It was really, really intense. And I think the black and white only added to that. Like a fully black and white episode, even like, you know, there's a lot of blood in that episode, but it felt even more high stakes for some reason in black and white than red. The whole thing was, I think it was really beautiful and it was a high octane episode. There was like a lot to stress over. And I thought it showed some interesting like resilience in the human spirit, you know, like the instinct to survive was really kind of beautiful to watch play out. But it was a tough one. It was a tough one to watch, I felt like. And I need context, especially like I love watching anything that's like apocalyptic, like anything that has to do with the end of the world. I'm all about, no matter how shit the movie is. Do you know what I mean? Like I will watch something on Netflix with like a 12% rating if it has to do with the apocalypse. I do not care. And like not knowing how it happened drives me insane. Like I feel like there's like an obvious answer, but it wasn't ever said out loud, which bugs me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. That, like, I mean, I don't think it's spoiling it to say that, like, you there's no explanation for this sort of post-apocalyptic world. You can sort of speculate that these robots that we're seeing may have had something to do with it, but it could also be something completely different.
Yeah, I mean, I would venture to guess that it was like the rise of AI, like the, you know what I mean, like the robots turning against us. That's like the number one fear of all these, you know, tech people. And like, I think Black Mirror chose. I think the order of these episodes is like really telling about strategy, because it's the second to last episode, Metalhead, and it was just a full on exposure and experience of what that would be like, or at least an interpretation of what that would be like for the robots to win out. And then Black Museum is more of like a, you know, let's tell some stories. Like let's experience storytelling of like how all these other things could play out. And there's a reason Black Museum finished instead of Metalhead. If you're binging through, I think it's much easier to end on a Black Museum, even though it's gruesome in some ways, than it is to end on Metalhead, because that's just too much.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because Black Museum, the first story, that one was the only time when I was actually, and I almost never do this with like horror or anything like that, is I was covering my eyes because there's one part that was so
I couldn't watch gruesome. That either. I was eating. I didn't expect it. I was eating and then like this scene comes on and I was like, holy shit, I'm looking away. I couldn't watch that.
So let's see. The two episodes we haven't really touched on yet are
Archangel and Crocodile.
And when Hang the DJ.
Oh, right. Crocodile and Hang the DJ. Well, and Archangel.
Yeah.
Like, broadly speaking, if we're, like, Archangel, I think, like, the trailer gave away a lot. So I'm just going to go into what the trailer was, which was, like, this mother loses her daughter briefly at a park, her young daughter, and decides to use this new tool called Archangel, which, like, puts a chip in her brain. and that helps her keep track of her. And I thought it was interesting, the, like, inversion. Like, nowadays we're so worried about, like, kids and their screen time. But, like, it felt like the mom became addicted to her screen time in terms of, like, keeping track of what the girl was doing and what she was up to. And I thought that was a really interesting kind of parallel. But I just, I thought that the episode itself hung itself on the tech so much. I like Black Mirror right. episodes where the tech is not, like, a function. Do you know what I mean? Of the plot. Like, it's
yeah.
there, and it's, you know, maybe part of the cause of a couple things here and there, or a consequence of a couple things here and there, but not, like, this Archangel tool was the whole plot. It was everything right. about that episode.
But if it's still, like, characters behaving in a certain way because of who they are, and then the technology sort of intersects with that, but it's not just, hey, here's the technology, and it goes bad for an hour.
Exactly. Like, this girl was raised with this chip in her head, so that the technology completely created who she was as a person, and the mom had been addicted to it for years and years and years. So that created who she was as a character, and their actions are all based around this piece of technology. That's not to say that the whole thing isn't interesting as a concept, and honestly, like, I could totally see it becoming a real thing, but
yeah,
it just didn't feel fully baked. Like, it didn't feel like it was a fully round circle. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just had some crispy edges that I didn't really like so much because of that kind of dependence on Archangel.
Yeah, I actually, because I had read an interview with Jodie Foster, who directed that episode before, and I think I'd kind of gotten spoiled a little bit for the plot. And on paper, the plot of it sounded so simplistic and schematic that I was really not excited about watching it. But I think, like, I agree that, like, everything ultimately ties back to the technology, but, like, the acting and just, like, some of the incidental details about, like, seeing this mom go to her job as, like, a physical therapist and things like that, like, felt real enough that, like, it was definitely not my favorite, but, like, I ended up liking it a lot more than I thought it would, because they still felt, even if, like, the technology drove all of the story, they still felt like real people to me.
I agree with that. I think the acting was phenomenal, and I thought there were, like, little touches and nuances that made it actually almost confusing technology-wise, because, like, she has a box full of wires, you know, but we're still able to plant a chip in this girl's head. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there were train tracks with, like, trains going back and forth, and, like, they looked very, like, steam engine, you know? Like, they didn't look...
Right.
And it just felt, like, where are you in time? Do you know what I mean?
Right. Right.
Which was a little
I will
confusing.
Say, parenthetically, that's one of the things I have a reservation about as far as the idea of, like, a Black Mirror shared universe, is that if that was true, you would think you would have seen more of the technology from some of the different episodes showing up in other episodes, and it seems like they've been fairly separate up until the Black Museum episode. So I didn't completely buy it, but I mean, I still like the idea. It's still a fun idea.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know. Like, that would, if I sat down with any of the Black Mirror creators, that would be my first question. Is, like, do you guys actually have a timeline? Or is some of it shared and some of it not? Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Is some of this 2142 and some of this is 2022 and some of it's 2062? Like, you know what I mean? Or is it all just kind of whenever?
Right. Because my feeling... And I could be totally wrong, but my feeling just watching this show is that it's much more like they come up with interesting stories and they don't care that much if they make sense together. And then it was almost like kind of just been another fun idea of, like, well, what if, like, all this stuff was in a museum together, but it wasn't something where you're like, oh, I see how this all fits together. You're just like, oh, that's kind of fun. All right.
Yeah, I agree. So anyways, I thought Archangel was fine. It just wasn't like, it wasn't a standout to me.
Yeah, I agree. And then Crocodile, I mean, in some ways is almost the opposite. It's closer to sort of what you're talking about, where there's one sort of high concept technology, but a lot of the episode really has nothing to do with that at all.
Yeah, I thought that was the one I actually watched most recently, because my girlfriend has certain ones that she wouldn't watch based on the reviews and what was scary or whatever, and she wouldn't watch Crocodile. She heard it was, like, very close to a horror film, which I don't agree with at all, honestly, but... she wouldn't watch that. So I watched that, like, last night, and I thought it was one of the greatest episodes because of that. The technology played a role for sure, but it wasn't like the the deciding factor in almost anything, really. And I thought that the story itself was, like, fascinating. It was, again, another one of those, who do you empathize with, you know, the whole time? And, you know, there were some really interesting little touches, like a pizza van, you know, that self-driving, you know, pick up your pizza from the pizza van that's driving around the neighborhood, like an ice cream truck, but with AI. I just thought that was, like, a cute little touch. I love the setting. It's set in Iceland, and it was white and scary and cold, and it was just, it was awesome. I really liked Crocodile.
Yeah, they milked it, really. I mean, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. They just have, like, these amazing shots when they're, like, characters are driving between locations of the of this beautiful, beautiful landscape, and there were definitely times where I was like, oh, I could just stare at this for, like, a few more minutes.
Yeah, I agree. And even, like, the wide shots of, like, the cities were, like,
yeah,
you know, they're not beautiful cityscapes by any means, but they're beautiful shots, you know? And I really enjoyed the whole episode. I was super tense throughout all of Crocodile. It was akin to Metalhead. Metalhead, I feel like, is more high octane. Crocodile is more like emotional stress, you know, like just like,
yeah,
you know, wanting well, to bite your fingernails.
Right. You're like kind of stressed. And then by the end, you're just like, or at least I was just like a complete wreck where I was just like, oh my God. Oh no. Oh my God.
Well, and you like, it's like the impossible could happen. Like the whole time I'm like, no, she's not going to do that. She's not going to do that. She won't do that. Like she can't do that. And like, that's what she did. And I'm like, why, dude? Like you're killing me. Oh
yeah. Yeah, we should probably hold up there because I think we're edging into spoiler territory there. But yeah, so then there's, I don't think it's a spoiler to say, you know, anyone who reads any of the reviews, Hang the DJ is definitely one of the more positive episodes.
Absolutely.
I'm interested because you, I mean, not to like always bring it back to the, but I mean, definitely you've like been like following and like writing about like online dating more than anyone else at TechCrunch, I think.
Yeah, I think my interpretation of this, again, it doesn't, the technology really has very little to do with this episode. So I thought that was great. And I thought the acting and the chemistry of the actors was really fantastic. I think the story here is all around like machine learning, right? And like what it means to live in a world with machine learning that is that good. And I thought Black Mirror did a really interesting job of kind of, it's hard for me to try to figure this out without spoilers. I don't know, creating the rules of machine learning and also breaking those rules of machine learning and what that means, and how that actually feeds machine learning. I don't know. I thought it was really, really good. And I thought it was absolutely bizarre too, to try to figure out like where you are in this world. And slowly coming to terms with all of that was really interesting too. I thought it was fantastic. I really liked Hang the DJ, and what a great
and I thought
title
like...
too.
Right, and I think the two lead actors especially are really really strong, and they have like really good chemistry together. I think the other thing I liked about it was because it's constructed in this way where at first you think it's, I mean, how is like there are certain questions that you have, things that don't necessarily make sense. Where you're like, I don't understand why, you know, things work this way in this world. And like, it seems at first like you think it just may not have been fully thought out. And it turns out that actually all of that is part of the story.
Yeah.
And it was really satisfying to be like, oh, okay, right. That's why that's happening.
And almost like to a point where like I really had to sit and think about it. Like at the end of the episode, I was like, hold on, what? And I was like, oh, you know what I mean? Like that level of satisfaction where like it, you bought into it so much. Like it worked for an hour to get you to kind of believe that this is how things were. And then it, once you buy into it, it's like, oh, well, it actually made more sense than you thought. You know what I mean? Like,
I really
liked it.
Yeah. I think the other thing it does really well is capture that feeling of, I would imagine that's probably true on like any first date, but especially the first date where you have not met this person and you've only like, you know, had like a little bit of connection online. and you're just kind of like, hey, how's it going? And just like that, it was just so charming and really good at like, you know, like making you kind of feel like you were there.
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job with a number of things, like they choosing when to montage and when not to, and the way that they went about like the passage of time and stuff like that, I thought was really fantastic. And what they chose to kind of linger on, like there could be a minute within the script that not a lot happens, but is worth it. And then, you know, huge time has passed, a ton of time has passed, and, you know, what they choose to freeze in on or focus on during that time is really interesting too. I thought it was a great episode. I'm just repeating myself over and over at this point, but I really liked Hang the DJ, and I thought it says something about like, it feels a little bit more current than the other episodes in a way, because like mm-hmm. that's what dating apps are doing right now. And so, you know, it felt very real.
Yeah, and it felt like close to sort of, the everyday experience of using technology right now.
Exactly.
Okay, so I guess we're probably going to go into spoilers. Maybe before we do, I'm curious, if somebody, you know, because this is an anthology series that you can kind of watch in any order, wanted to start with Black Mirror, and would you advise them to just start from the beginning, or do you think you might actually tell them to start with season 4?
No, I would tell them to start with season 4. Because I think, well, you know, it's hard because there are some really great episodes in the past. And I feel like season 4 is probably the most optimistic, to be honest.
Yeah.
So maybe you should start at the beginning if you want to end on a high note. In terms of season 4 itself, I would go in order. I think it was very specifically chosen. And I watched it out of order, and it was very difficult, I feel like, to do that. Like, I watched USS Callister and Hang the DJ and Black Museum first. And the other three are, you know, not as easy to watch as those, so.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, definitely season 4 more than any other. I mean, I think, well, the first two seasons, because there's three episodes each, I don't get the sense that, they put a ton of thought into it because, you know, there's just so many options. But three, it felt like they had some, you know, some ideas behind the order. But this is even more than season 3. It felt like, you know, that it wasn't that each one kind of like made sense where it was in the season.
Yeah, I agree. I would start with old seasons and get to season 4 and watch it in order. And I feel like you can pick and choose with, you know, check the reviews and see what's upsetting and what's not. Because some of them are like fine to watch, and some of them will like really mess with you in the older seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, and in this season too.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so now we're going to go into spoilers. So if you have not seen all the episodes of season 4 of Black Mirror, you should probably stop listening now unless you don't care about spoilers. All right, we'll give you a second to go away. So, Jordan, what is there anything spoilerific that you wanted to start with?
Not particularly. I feel like we actually did a pretty good job talking about these without spoilers. I mean, the one thing that I was like having trouble with was Hang the DJ. At the end, you know, you find out that the whole episode has happened in a split second on their phone, matching them.
Yeah.
And you like they've lived these whole like almost like these whole lives in this like weird ass compound where you're matched with people and you don't have a choice and tells you the expiration date of these relationships, and at the end this couple chooses to rebel and run away together, and you're like, why does this world even exist this way anyway? But yes, they should rebel. Like, they should rebel. And then you find out that like their rebellion against the machine learning system is actually what created their match in the first place.
Right, so it, like, is almost like that's how the system works, is through their rebellion.
Exactly, and by, like, running simulations of whether or not, if paired with other people, they would choose each other instead. And the fact that that happens, you know, the episode takes place over, like, a number of years, like 2 or 3 years. And for that to happen in a blink of an eye on a phone, and for you to buy into the fact that, because, you know, we think of dating apps, and we think of, like, swiping on Tinder or whatever, and you match with someone on Tinder, it means absolutely nothing at this point. Like when Tinder first launched and you matched with someone, you were like, oh, I have like a twinkle in my eye and hope in my heart, you know? And like that is gone now. Like these apps, we don't think of anything. We don't give any significance or meaning to the idea of matching. It's only after a date or two dates or three dates that you start to actually be like, oh, this worked for me. And it wasn't due to the app. It was due to the fact that both of you like kept your plans and actually got to know each other and enjoyed each other. But the idea that an right. app could actually do that is fascinating. And I'm curious, like, you know, these dating apps that we have now never tell us what signals they're using. You can expect that they're using all of them, you know, but they don't tell us how any of that is being built or if it works. And we don't have any transparency into that. And it was cool to see like what a computer thinks. You know what I mean? And that was what that episode was about. And I really liked that.
Yeah. I think that's like a great sort of like analysis of it. I think it was also just like, as like in the experience of watching it, it was just like a fun twist where you're just like, what? Oh, okay. I get it.
Yeah.
And I think it just like works well in the moment. I wonder if like, you know, somebody who actually understands how dating apps work now and how machine learning works now would be like, that has nothing to do with anything that exists right now. But I mean, I think it was still interesting conceptually on its own.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was a great episode, and I think it is one of my favorites for that very reason, is like it felt so current because people are trying to build these algorithms for very specific use cases. For something like love, like we have to be so far away from that, you know, but to watch it actually play out and see like what the inner workings might look like in this like black box, you know, it could be completely unrealistic, but it like gives you a sense of the idea of training, because like all these machine learning algorithms are trained, right? And like they're taught to like trial and error everything, and that's exactly what happened. It was just a bunch of trial and error within this little mini virtual universe that happened over a split second.
I agree that we probably covered all of the episodes and said mostly what I wanted to say. The one thing I did just want to briefly touch on is, yeah, like the way they treat like DNA in USS Callister.
Oh my God, right?
First of all, he's like casually like, hey, I built this machine where I can take a tiny bit of DNA and like, you know, just create a digital replica of you. Already was like, wow, really? Like
with all your emotions and stuff too. Like what is that?
And all your memories. Right. And like that is not, first of all, like that's not how DNA works. I'm not a biologist, but I'm 100% confident that DNA does not contain your life's memories. And then be like, if he had built that, like, you know, it felt like just like if somebody had invented that in the society and it existed in the society, that would be one thing. But it was like, oh, he's like just such a genius that he built this at home. And then like a lot of the plot in the final act is about like trying to
drive into a wormhole,
like steal stuff from his fridge that would allow him to, and it was just like, because I didn't believe that, it made it really hard to feel like totally on board for like a lot of the stuff that happens in the final act.
Yeah. Well, and I was like, well, how does that stop him from like, none of these people even know that he, you know, is doing this to them. How does that stop him from stealing the DNA? Which obviously is answered by the fact that they were on holiday and he kind of doesn't make it at the end, so that worked out. But there was no way that like the folks that were in the virtual reality alternate universe could know that that's how it would end up, you know what I mean?
It ends up being a happy ending for them just because of the way the plot unfolds, not because their plan was particularly good.
Exactly. And the idea of like flying into a wormhole to access the internet during an update, like I don't know, there were a lot of pieces of it that I was just very like, Or the fact that he put like a lollipop into the little like DNA 3D printer or whatever, like just the whole lollipop goes in there. Are you kidding me? Like that's not going to make him part lollipop. I was just a little put off by all that as well. But I thought as a whole, the story of this like kind of meek fangirl, and I don't even think that's what her personality was. I think that's like a representation of how women have trained themselves in the workplace, you know, to like what you have to do is like praise the men around you and be very like quiet and subservient. And then you know, build trust over time, and hopefully you get to assert a little bit more control over your own situation. But she like got thrown into this world where she just had to go for it, and it showed what her real personality is, which is like that of a leader, you know. I liked the episode as a whole, but I agree with you. There are some real issues. And I was reading a review that was like, yeah, the story itself is brilliant. And then like words would come out of people's mouths. And I was like, that's not what, that doesn't make any sense.
I also, one other smaller thing that I felt conflicted about was like, there's this plot line, which is about the way that they like finally get the version of this woman to help them, who lives outside the virtual world, to help them is basically like blackmailing her with these photos that she's uploaded. And like, obviously that is a thing that, you know, that has some like real world resonance, and like in some ways sort of maybe adds a little bit of this interesting touch of sort of moral complexity to it, because it sort of puts these people who are doing something heroic, but they have to do something sort of horrible to get there. But then the way it was played was almost as a joke, where they're all kind of like standing around looking at the photos and kind of like nudging each other, like, oh. And I was not crazy about the way they handled that.
Yeah, but like I felt like it was actually a little bit more realistic, because none of these people have proven themselves to be good. Like, just right. Because they've been, you know, totally abused in this little alternate universe doesn't actually mean that they are like righteous people who care about doing the right thing. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I actually felt like it was very on par for that group of people to like casually browse through her photos and send them to her like, any of the last seven would work. You know, like that is actually their personality. And I think it's important to make that distinction, because otherwise it's exactly what you were worried about before, which is this tech nerd who's treated poorly in the real world is actually like a psycho control freak, you know, in his at home life. And, you know, they're all the bad guys for having treated him that way. And, you know, I feel like you have to keep them as who they are, which is there are no real good guys in this whole episode, except for maybe, the lead female character. What's her name? Kristen
Milioti is the actress. I don't remember her character name.
Yeah. And even she, you know, has her like moments of like, you know, in the beginning of the episode, even the way that she's acting isn't really true to her personality, but I think she really truly believed that this guy was an amazing coder and wanted to get to know him. But she went along with, you know, him touching the back of her, you know, touching her on the back, and you know, the weird stuff that like you really shouldn't stand for, I don't think. But
yeah.
That's a different discussion.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And I think, like, and I think, again, like, that you're, if you read it as, like, well, none of these people are necessarily particularly good, it's just that, like, in this circumstance, you're rooting for them because of the circumstances, that makes more sense. I guess, like, part of it was, to me, is, like, just, like, and it's believable that they would sort of, like, you know, go through her photos. It's just more, like, the tone of, like, a lot of that stuff, to me, doesn't quite nail it for that, like, where... To me, that scene feels like it's meant to play as funny rather than sort of like gross what they're doing. And in the same way that, like, I think at the end, it feels like it's supposed to feel very heroic. And so, like, and though they have this great moment at the very end when they've entered this larger universe and they just like run into like this other online asshole, which I really liked. But like, it still feels like it sort of ends up being a much more traditional heroes versus villain kind of ending.
Well, and I think Black Mirror struggles in general with like comedic relief.
Yeah.
Like they you can see them strive towards it, and still they like, you know, it, you just can't actually let yourself enjoy it. And that's part of like the viewer and the writing itself. Like you're in the midst of this crazy thing with USS Callister, and like, yeah, like The Last Seven should work is actually okay writing, but it's just not suitable for the moment. Do you know what I mean? Like it would work in How I Met Your Mother. That would be funny.
Right.
But it's just not in this context. And same thing with Metalhead. There were a couple funny, actually funny moments where she's kind of talking shit to this dog robot.
Mm-hmm.
But like you can't enjoy that. Like it's not, you know what I mean? Like life is on the line, lady, you know? Like
Yeah, no, I think that's fair on both counts. I think the last thing I wanted to say about USS Callister, one thing, just because I've been saying, being negative, is I think, like, there's one moment where even if this character is meant to be sort of a kind of ambiguous character, the CEO, who has this, like, big heroic moment at the end where he tries to apologize, where he pretends he's about to apologize to the nerd, and then he says, but you, like, threw my son out of an airlock, so, you, like, you can, like, go fuck yourself. Or he, it was better than that. I can't remember. It was, like, you can fuck yourself to death, and it was just, like, so good, and, like, that, even despite all my reservations, like, I wanted to, like, stand up and cheer at that moment. So, like, I still, like, had a good, you know, got to a good place with it.
Yeah, well, and I feel like both of them were creeps in just very different ways, and, like, neither of them really deserves much redemption, and I feel like, you know, we don't know how things ended for the real-world people, other than their CTO died. So right. You don't know what kind of karma is coming to, like, real-world version of CEO, you know? If, like, the death of his CTO causes big problems, that's probably likely, given that, like, he didn't seem to know how to do anything and the CTO was doing everything. But in, you know, I think the alternate universe guy kind of did redeem himself and found some empathy. He knew he owed him an apology, but also he didn't really at the same time.
Right.
He didn't owe this version of him.
Yeah, and it was a great answer to just, like, the thing of, hey, like, if you've been, like, mistreated, and particularly if you've been, like, bullied as a kid, that's, like, a really bad thing, but it doesn't justify turning into a complete monster now.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, a good message to end on.
Yeah, I liked the shifting empathy. I was all about that, so I thought that was really good.
Cool. I think that's pretty much everything I wanted to say about Black Mirror. What about you?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty good on everything.
All right. Well, Jordan Crook, thank you for joining us on Original Content, and thank you to everyone who is listening. If you haven't already, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or on the podcast service of your choice. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also shoot us an email. There's so many ways you can reach us. But mostly, thanks for listening. And thanks again, Jordan, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.